sitting dogs me around.
I saw that on the I like that on what's his name,
Cody Jinks.
Well, his was good.
The one I just put out this morning, that's the first time I've done it.
Trying to, what's it, jeez, Brent Cobb. I like that one.
Oh yeah, that was a great episode.
That was a good episode. Yeah,
Brent Cobb, we're just going, I'm just gonna roll into it just like this. Right. Yeah, the Brent Cobb episode was great. I got a lot of compliments on that one. People love that because he kind of went through like all of the stages of you know, he kind of walked us through that timeline of like his, not only like his career, but like all the shit that was going on around him. And like, I was fucking loving it. I was like, you know, just hearing it. It was like hearing it straight from the horse's mouth. That was great.
Yeah. A little country history lesson.
Country history lesson with Brent Cobb. I think I should get him on like recurring character once a month or something, which is be story time with Brent.
Yeah.
I think that'd be awesome.
We loved that episode. I don't know if you do. You follow Paul Cawthon on Instagram?
I do. Yes.
Can't remember. I guess it was on Valentine's Day. Paul was like, "Did you see him making fun of Brent Cobb?" And because Brent had posted like a video saying, "Hey guys, this is Brent Cobb," and then Paul gets on his phone and films himself, and he's like, "Hey guys, this is Brent Cobb. Happy Valentine's Day, baby. I'm gonna get you."
No way.
I think it got taken down, but it was so good.
Dude, that's so funny.
Paul's best videos get taken down.
I didn't see that. Dude, Paul Cawthon can come up with some fucking hilarious shit on there. A few years ago, he put out that Cawthon's Coffins thing. Did you ever see that?
I don't know if I did, but I got
it. I'll try. I think it's on YouTube. I'll see if I can find it and send it to you. It's like an old, like you know, those like 90s, like flashy, like fucking ads for like your local fucking like furniture department. You know what I mean? Yeah, just be like, yeah. He's on there and he's like, "Yeah, down at Cawthon's Coffins." Fucking, he's out with all these stupid one-liners and shit. It was so fucking funny, dude. This is probably like 3 or 4 years ago now. But it was priceless.
He is a funny guy. Love that guy.
Yeah. You went on tour with Brent Cobb. What was that like? That was back in the fall. That was like October, November. You guys
I think the run started end of October maybe, and went into the first couple weeks of November. I can't really remember, it's such a blur, but we went from Eastern Kentucky all the way to New Mexico in 3 days.
God and damn.
Then
yeah,
we were just, then we were following his bus, and we went to San Francisco. We played, my first California show ever was the Troubadour in LA, opening up for Brent. First time ever. I'd never been to California,
damn.
And I stepped foot in LA.
You've never like been to California, period. No. Like even, I mean, as my, just like a person.
My folks say that we went when I was like one to San Diego.
Well, that doesn't count.
But that doesn't count.
That doesn't count. Wow. That's a cool fucking experience.
Dude, it was wild. But Brent is the best guy, and he and his team were, that's kind of the thing, you know, when you're the opener and you're at that point in your career where you're just taking all these opening gigs,
yeah.
And it's really, it can be nerve wracking.
Oh, 100%.
You're opening up for somebody who, and Brent's not like, he's not Hank Williams Jr., but I mean, he still has some clout, and
yeah,
there's totally. Some, you know, hardcore respect. So it's like, there's always like a little bit of kind of nerves going into first, like being with a new team and how they're going to respond. Yeah. He just like completely took us in, helped us anything we needed. They, and Brent, you know, after the show would like have us in the green room and just be chilling and wanted to talk, you know, just such a
fuck
sweet
yeah.
guy, dude. The best guy.
Yeah. There's like multiple layers of nerves to that, I would feel like, because it's like, not only is it Brent, like Brent, the fucking, like you put him up on this pedestal, like this is Brent, and that's,
yeah.
he's a singular guy. Then there's his band, the guys in his yeah. band. You want them to think you're cool.
Yep.
You, because, you know, they're tight with Brent. You also, and then you got to deal with like the team, like the, you know, I don't know what his team consists of, but it's like sometimes like, you know, production manager, tour manager, all these different like yeah. people that are like making shit happen for him. It's like, those are the people you kind of like, yeah, you got to impress Brent and the band and like get their respect and hang out with them and show them you're cool and a good hang. But it's like, you got to deal with like the management and the fucking team that tech, you know, really don't have to be nice to you if they don't want to, and and won't yeah. be nice to you if you're fucking up, you know.
Right. Yeah.
Those yeah, are the ones you really got to fucking impress.
Well, you never know, like how with a new team, you never know who's going to be real strict about set time, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah.
Hey, you went over 30 seconds, or I mean, we never even get close because we just don't want to ever even be
in yeah. any.
But still, you just never know like what the vibe is going in. So you want to show respect. You want to be cool. You want to make sure that, yeah, you're just trying to get them to like you and hope they yeah. think you're cool too. So
totally. Yeah. Especially that first show. It's like, all right, like we're going to cut it early. Like,
yeah, dude.
To make sure.
Yeah. And then they're like, hey man, you know, you guys can play, you can play a couple more songs. We don't want you cutting it too short there, buddy.
Yeah. That's great. All right. Yeah, should we start?
Go for it, dude. Yeah.
Podcast? No. Yeah. I'm yeah. kidding. We're starting. Oh, are we?
I just feel like we're in a cabin.
I just never did a big spiel. Welcome, JD. How are you today?
Nobody needs to know who I am. They do not care.
They can read. They can read. They clicked on the episode. This is JD.
If you want to know me, come find me. We'll get coffee.
Fuck. Well, everybody, if you have not figured it out yet, JD Clayton is the guest on Hippies and Cowboys today. Thanks for doing the podcast, JD. There's my obligatory little spiel for everybody.
For having me, Gary McKee. It's a pleasure to sit with you virtually and yes. discuss all things rock yeah. and roll.
Totally. Who knows where this is gonna go, but I'm here for the ride.
Yeah, that's what it is, baby. Life's a ride.
Just you, me, and the chickens in the background.
Yeah, so if they get too loud, let me know. I can shut that door. But
just go yell at them.
I'm in my studio, and it's, I don't have the heat on yet because it's kind of like that in between, so it's It's like 55 in here. I'm freezing.
Oh shit! Yeah, I'm
warmer
in like
outside.
I'm in like this like weird like sunroom thing at this Airbnb.
Oh, nice.
It's kind of fucking cool. I like it. It's there's like a little like coil heater over here, and it's actually, I mean, it's cool, but it's perfect. I don't want to be too hot either. It's lovely.
You can't beat a sunroom. That's an essential.
This is great. I've never had one in any house I live in, and I'm like sitting out here drinking coffee, and I'm like, this is nice.
Yeah, the perfect for sitting, perfect for letting the sun come in. Can't beat a sunroom.
Yeah, this is great. I think I want one day when I have a home.
Yeah, dude, get you one. Get you a sunroom.
one day when I grow up and I'm an adult and I can have a home.
You're a real boy.
Yeah, exactly. We kicked off the episode with Arkansas Kid, which you put out. I believe that was that in the fall, or am I?
Yeah, maybe September, end
yeah,
of September.
Yeah, I thought so. I guess I don't know if you want to do a little like post, little story about that one after everybody heard it, and tell us a little bit about that song.
Yeah, sure. You know, that song was kind of like, I don't know, when I was making Long Way From Home, I was doing a lot of research and kind of digging into a lot of different rock bands. And one of the bands that I listened to probably the most was Lynyrd Skynyrd. And on their first record, on the deluxe edition that appears on digital platforms, whatever, there's a song called Mississippi Kid that's like towards the bottom. And I just kind of randomly stumbled upon that and loved the song. And yeah, just kind of one of those things that happens organically when you're sitting around the living room playing songs that you've learned. I figured out that it was in E, and you know, I had another song that was in E that I knew I could kind of like work it into the show and blend it in a way that would like, you know, kind of be natural. And it just kept going. I kind of like was just strumming and figured I'd change the words to Arkansas. And then it went a little further, and I kind of, just tried to make it my own. And then it became a thing, and the band loved it. And then we kind of put our own, you know, style on it when we were in the rehearsal space. And yeah, it just slowly developed at the shows.
Did you ever plan on recording it? Because I know it's like you close the show with that. It's kind of the big banger to fucking end things off. And it's
yeah,
like, did you ever plan to record it, or was it just going to be like this fun like jam to end things off?
Yeah, it just started as a fun jam to end things. And but after it was, I don't know if it was the run. It must have been at the beginning of like 2023. We did a few shows and ended the show with it, and it went so well that it was just like, man, we can't not record this when we go back into the studio.
Yeah.
So it just, you know, one of those things. I wish that it had a cooler story, but it really just kind of blended naturally and happened on its own.
No, that is a cool story, because it's like, I think fans would be interested to hear that, because it's like sometimes, you know, at least before I kind of understood and, you know, hung out with artists more and like didn't, you know, understand that type of stuff, how things kind of come to be eventually. I think I just assumed that like shit that, you know, everything that came out was, you know, planned to fucking go in the studio and cut it, you know? And it's like, sometimes it's weird when you start to like understand more about it, you realize that sometimes shit's like kind of an accident.
Yeah, that's really what it was. Yeah. And I mean, that's, I would say that's the majority. You know, as I'm kind of in the next phase and doing another record. And as I sit with these PR folks and have to craft stories, you know, you start to realize it's like, man, a lot of this that we do in this kind of storytelling medium is fabricated. And
yeah,
we write these stories to entertain people and help them, you know, change them, help them have a better life, you know, whatever they get out of it, we're doing that for them. And I think some people really hang the truth flag on artists when, you know, in reality, it's like a lot of this is just good storytelling. Doesn't always have to be true.
Yeah, and
It's
I think what I
happens kind of slowly.
what I stumbled through there, I think what I meant is like I don't think there's really like a bad story about a song or like behind a song, you know what I mean? Like it's like anything, any of that shit's like interesting to me.
Yeah, same. I mean, I think for me, it's just trying to, if I'm going to tell a story that is, it's not biographical, it's not about me, I'm going to try to tell it in a way that means something to somebody else and try to use some empathy and put myself in someone else's shoes so that I can, even though I've never been there, try to understand what that feels like.
Yeah, you're just at the end of the day trying to get people to relate to whatever you're saying in the song. That seems like a good time to ask, how did all you're 28, as we established before we started recording. What was when was music like how did music come into your life when you were a kid?
I mean, at the earliest stage, my granddad was a banjo player in a bluegrass band, and they would, tour around, you know, different parts of Arkansas and feed, they would go to prisons and feed the guys a barbecue and then play a bluegrass show. And so, like, every Friday night, I would spend the night at their house, and he would have the banjo out after dinner. And so, you know, eventually he taught me a few chords, you know, GCD, what else do you need? And it kind of, that was it for a long time. I mean, my dad got me a guitar when I was really young, and he could play a few songs, but I really had two worlds going at the same time because it was like I understood this bluegrass kind of gospel world, and then over here you had my dad who hated country music, and he was more like an early 2000 songwriter guy. So Jack Johnson, John Mayer,
Interesting.
Norah Jones, Amos Lee. So that was kind of like what was being played in my house growing up. That's all I knew. So I guess when I got into about the, I don't know, junior high school, I started kind of picking up music and getting really interested in it and teaching myself songs from YouTube. And teaching myself how to play from YouTube, and it kind of just
That's when you
grew.
like first got a guitar and started to strum around.
Yeah, my dad was a pastor, so I was, you know, constantly in church. And the guy that I knew a little bit on piano that I had learned from YouTube, and I knew I had been, I was a drummer in the school band, and the guy that was leading worship at this church quit, and there was nobody else that knew how to play anything. So I just got thrown into, that was as a ninth grader, got thrown into leading worship. And you know, so immediately kind of started to get out of my comfort zone and sing in front of people and do that whole thing. And then senior year of high school, a friend of mine who was in choir, she kind of asked me if I would sing with her at graduation. And so we went and tried out and we got chosen. And, you know, I went to a huge high school. So graduation, there were thousands of people in the stands and we played a Head in the Heart song. I think it
Cool.
was Rivers and Roads.
Wow.
After that, I mean, I had the bug because it went so well. And just having people come up and be like, man, that was just beautiful. It just really, I was like, man, that was so cool that I could play my guitar and have an effect and make people happy. And so immediately I had the bug. And I went down to the farmer's market in my hometown of Fort Smith, Arkansas, and started setting up on the corner with my guitar and started playing for tips. And yeah, it was just kind of, I'd stand there and play for like 4 hours and play just covers. But a few months later, I started freshman year of college, and I was in a music appreciation class, and there was a kid in the back who raised his hand and said that he played guitar. They were asking if anybody played music or whatever. So he was the only guy in the room that actually like played something, and he was a guitar player. So after class, I saw that he was in the same dorm as me. So I like went and asked him, you know, hey man, if you ever want to jam sometime, would love to hang. And, so we kind of hit it off, became great buds, and we started a band called Small Town Symphony and played our first show at Starbucks on campus. Hell and it was just my, it was just my whole family there. No one else came. grandparents, everybody, you know.
That's great.
But that was kind of a tough place to be, because I went to college to become an orthodontist. I was studying biology. Like I was going to try to become a doctor, and so that was kind of tough for my folks to like see, and they were a little bit weirded out, disappointed.
They're like, what the fuck are you doing, man? You're supposed to be studying, like put the fucking guitar down.
Yeah. So that was kind of tough at first, but you know, I went through college, ended up changing, and I got a business degree in marketing, and all the while I was like kind of learning how to make music and record it. So on Fridays, I would skip class, leave Fort Smith at 5 a.m., get to Nashville around 1, and I would stay with a buddy out there for the weekend that I knew could record music. And then I would try to record as many demos as I could, and I'd be back at class by Monday. And I did that several times during college, just trying to learn how, like, you know, how Nashville worked, what recording music was like. And it didn't really go well. Like the guy I was working with, kind of, he was, you know, having some drug problems, and it was just like, I wasn't getting anywhere. And so, junior year, I was in Nashville, and I saw, I worked for a, this is too much information, but I worked for a trucking company like during college, and they had an office in Nashville. So that's how I was able to like kind of rig it. It was, I would go out for a work trip to Nashville, and during the evenings I'd be like, you know, going around and doing all the stuff.
Double dipping on the work trip.
That's right. Double dipping. Yeah. So that was kind of how I was able to get out there. But I, I saw on Instagram, this guy, a singer-songwriter that I followed, posted a picture, and he had tagged a friend of his, and I just was kind of like trying to get to know all these guys that were movers and shakers in town. And I saw this guy had in his bio producer. His name was Thomas Doolin. And so I messaged Thomas on Instagram. I was like, hey dude, I'm in town for the week. Is there any way you would, I saw your Instagram says producer, I'm kind of looking for a new producer. Is there any way you would get coffee with me and discuss doing a project? And because the projects that I'm trying to work on right now are really not going well. So we got in the studio and cut my first EP, Smoke Out the Fire. And I released that in November of 2018 and then did a release show, and it sold out. And it was, so going from like the Starbucks freshman year to senior year, playing a sold out show in like one of my favorite hometown venues, it was like my folks saw like, okay, like this is
Yeah, it's
what the
real.
yeah this could be something. So, and it, this is not to say like they were not supportive. They don't, it's
No.
not that story at all, but it was just, any parent that they want the best for their kid, they see, where I come from in Arkansas, doing music as like an actual like job is not,
Yeah, like
it's not
something
what
you
you do.
do for fun on the weekends or something like that
Yeah.
with your pals, like
It's not a lifestyle that is really, for having a family and like,
yeah.
all that. So anyway,
You like
that
work
was
a
kind
real
of
job and then
like
you play the rodeo dance once a summer or something like that.
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, that was kind of the beginning of it all. And, a year later, my wife and I moved to Nashville. And so yeah, once we got there, I mean, short about 6 months later, COVID hit, and I ended up,
Perfect timing.
I had been trying to like figure out how to get connected and all this stuff. Living in Nashville is a totally different beast. I mean, it's just because not only are you trying to still play the dance, but you're living day-to-day life. You got to figure it out. You're working somewhere. Unless you come in with a lot of money, I mean, it's just a different animal.
Yeah.
And having been born and raised in a town like Fort Smith, moving to Nashville was the big city. And so it was a rude awakening on all fronts.
And everybody around you is probably trying to do the exact same thing that you are. They're working a job too, trying to figure themselves out too.
Yeah, and that's the thing about Nashville. I love Nashville, but it always makes me chuckle when people want to talk about community and talk about, it's hilarious because at the end of the day, if somebody pops off, you find out that it's a lot more cutthroat than people want to talk about. And it's all fun and games and community until somebody starts like really popping off, and then it's like, all right, see you guys. And so that you just got to be careful, and you I'm not saying don't trust anybody, and I'm not saying don't have community, but I'm just saying I learned a lot, and you can't, it's a town of hard knocks. You got to kind of go and figure it out for yourself. But COVID hit, and I got a job at a landscape company south of Nashville. I had been let go from my job, and luckily my landlord owned this landscape company and was like, hey, I'll give you a job. So just start. COVID had hit, and like a week later I was down. It was about a 30-minute drive south of Nashville, and it was me, Nico, Alfredo, and Jose all on one truck. And we were on the installation team, and we would drive around Nashville and plant trees, run irrigation, do it all. It was crazy. But I can drive around Nashville now with no masks.
Yeah.
I know every
Poor guy.
street and I've been to almost every house.
That makes two of us that can drive in Nashville. I don't know about the people that actually fucking live there. They
That's
certainly can't.
sad truth, sad truth.
God.
Yeah, you gotta merge, man, when you're getting off.
She's a fucking signal light once in a while. How about
Yeah.
that? That'd be
Well,
crazy.
don't be afraid of fast moving cars, just
Yeah.
get in the merge lane, hang out there, and when it opens, you just get over.
Nashville's the worst for like if you're on the highway already and you're in that right lane and somebody's coming on from the fucking ramp, You have to fucking yield, dude. If you're on the fucking ramp and there's a line of cars there, you can't just drive out there and drive on the shoulder and almost sideswipe me.
Yeah, tough. God. It's a tough. That's a tough move.
Fucking insane.
People forgot to learn that one in class.
You do not have the right of way.
No. No. Yeah. So basically, I just went through COVID and wrote Long Way From Home, kind of in the back of the truck day to day. It was just kind of, I was super depressed, super. I didn't see my folks for like 8 months because Arkansas was getting hit real bad and like everybody's freaking out about it.
And everybody's, I mean, at the time, like definitely everybody was worried about it. Nobody knew what the fuck was going on. So it was like, it was easy to be a little, you know, even if you weren't super confident that it was going to like kill you and everybody you knew, it was like you were still a little worried about it. You know, you were like,
I'll just stay home.
Don't know what to do. So I'm probably just going to go to work and go home, I guess. Yeah.
It was weird. So basically, I did that for a year and a half. And I got to the end. It was like 2021, right when you could like middle of 2021, right when you could feel that things were like starting to kind of like open up.
Yeah.
And I called back Thomas Doolin that did my first project. And I just said, dude, I don't know how I'm going to pay for it, but I need you to set aside 2 weeks. I've got 10 songs. I've got the band already picked out. Set aside time in the studio. I'm coming in and I'm tracking this project. I quit my job and recorded Long Way From Home and basically just did, you know, worked odd like construction jobs here and there to like tie me over till 2022 when things were fully open. And I just used that time to like mix the project. We ended up hiring Craig Alvin, who's worked a little bit with Casey Musgraves and some other folks. And he was office down in Muscle Shoals and was working out of Cypress Moon, right there on the Tennessee River. And so I would go down to Muscle Shoals and sit with him while he was mixing Long Way From Home. And so that was kind of a cool process. But yeah, basically I get a message in early 2022 from a girl that works at a big agency. She just followed me on Instagram. And I was like, what the heck? Like, this is, I don't know why you followed me, but I'm going to reach out. So I just messaged her and was like, hey, I don't know. Hi, why you followed me, but I would love to show you some music and buy you some coffee sometime. And so then I find out that she's, you know, a fellow Arkansan, and I show her the music, and sure enough, a couple months later, I'm signed to William Morris and end up signing with a management company, and the rest is history. We've been touring for the last year and a half, and just last year recorded my second project, and we're going to be putting that out this year. So we're on the grind. Just trying to grow a little bit every day.
Yeah, man. From the time I first met you to now, I feel like you've took off like big time. I met you pretty much a year ago exactly, and I knew about you a few months before that, but I disregarded it, as I told you. Remember that?
I forgot about that.
Dude, that's actually a funny story.
We should talk about that.
I should explain that. So like doing the podcast, especially back then when I was doing it more consistent. I mean, I'm going to be more consistent now, everybody, obviously, but you know, we get emails. I probably get 10 to 15 emails a day at least, from, if not, well, probably more. I'm pretty sure I turn my notifications off for the most part on some of that stuff, but You know, I get a lot of messages, a lot of unsolicited, you know, just cold DMs, cold emails, this and that, whatever it may be, about artists to like get them on the podcast or new releases or whatever. You know, like you get a lot of stuff, and it's, there's nothing wrong with that. And I'm, you know, I love getting the chance to sometimes hear somebody before somebody else, but like lots of the time something happened somewhere along the way where like I started to kind of only, like back when the podcast first started, I think I'd like go through and listen to like most of what anybody ever sent me, just in case I was like missing something, you know. I also had a lot more fucking time on my hands, let's be honest. I'd be at work and just be like going through emails like, all right, let's listen to this guy, who cares. But I had met somebody in January of 2023. And this person had my phone number through a series of different events. And this guy was like, he was a nice dude. I, you know, he's a cool guy, but he was like constantly, like he'd be like texting me different artists that he knew, like his friends and stuff, and being like, yeah, yeah, like this guy's great or this girl's great or whatever. And he was constant. It was never ending. And I met this guy one time, and he just like, you know, I gave him my phone number because like he seemed like a nice guy. And then he, you know, he just constantly, like almost every day, he'd be like texting me. So like, what do you think? Like, and he'd text me something, and then he'd like be like, yeah, I'll be like, yeah, man, like I'll check it out. And then he'd like follow up and be like, so, and like it was, oh, like, man. Listen,
give
man,
it a
like,
rest, fella. Give it a rest.
I got shit to do. Like, I just, you know, I'll let you know. It, like, it's all good. And so then, like, a couple weeks after this guy has been, like, constantly sending me shit and, like, doing this and that, kind of being annoying, honestly, I get a random text message from this guy. And you know, in, like, that, you know, in, like, on the iPhone, at least, like, you can, like, set your little, like, contact picture and stuff and whatever.
Yeah.
And if somebody with that setting, like that set up on their phone, texts you, it'll say like maybe, you know, JD Clayton.
Yeah.
And so I admittedly had never heard of you ever. And I get a text message and it's like, dude, I bet you I could scroll back and find it, honestly, right now. It's like I get this fucking unsolicited text message from you. And I assume that it's this guy has given out my phone number. Giving out my phone number to God knows. Yeah. Hey, Hippies and Cowboys Pod. This is JD Clayton. I'm a singer songwriter from Fort Smith. I just wanted to introduce myself and say I'm a fan. Been following on TikTok for a minute and love the reviews. Just put my first album out and wanted to send it y'all's way. If for nothing more, I'm curious what y'all think about it. Thanks for doing what you do. Cheers. And you sent me the Spotify link. My reply.
What did you say?
Dude, my reply to this 2 minutes later was, how do you get my number?
Dude, my stomach literally dropped. I was just sitting there in my like work chair at home, and like, what have I done? What have I done?
Dude, I'm such an asshole. Dude, because like I just assumed, like, this, first of all, very polite, very well put together, cold text message. Like, you said nothing.
I worked for a logistics company. I did this.
You said nothing. You said nothing remotely rude or like pushy or anything. It was a very sweet, just, hey man, like, you know, love what you do. Here's my record. Like, I hope you like it. Oh, thanks, man. No, instead, how'd you get my number? Because I just assumed that it was like this guy who was being annoying, just handing my phone number out to like anybody. Not that like I really give a fuck of me, but it's like, I just immediately related to this fucking situation that just happened. Like, how'd you get my number? And you're like, I being a fucking idiot. You're like, it's on your Instagram account under contact. You're like, oh, dude. And then I felt so bad because you were like, if I should have gone through Insta DM, my apologies. I don't know. I was like, then again, my reply, I'm like, no prob. Just have somebody giving it out, I think, who shouldn't be recently, and I was curious. And then you know, we carried on, and it was a good conversation after that.
Now I know that it was a little bit of that Canadian, big Canadian energy coming out, baby. You got to protect. And
I don't know, that wasn't very fucking stereotypically polite Canadian to me. Just, how'd you get my number? I'm surprised it didn't be like, motherfucker. Like,
yeah, I pulled it up and was going to send you a DM.
That's
and
so then, funny, man.
And then I like saw, oh, they got contact turned on.
Just
and
a phone number.
Got the number.
I think I took it off there. I mean, it might still be on there. I don't even know, but.
Well,
I think I may have took it off there after that because I was just like, maybe I shouldn't have my phone number on here. It's probably still on there. I'm going to look right now. It's probably still on there. If it is, I'm going to take it off before this episode comes up. No, it's still on there. I'm going to take it off.
Surprised you're not getting blown up.
Dude, I've had people just call me too. So that
I should have done that. That would have been way better.
Actually, you probably, yeah, knowing that, but I, then in person, I would have been like, how'd you get my number? But it would have been less like blunt, yeah. Probably.
How'd you get my number?
How'd you get my number? Who is this? Oh, fuck. That's so funny. And then like, and then, so I was working, you were opening up some shows for somebody I work for. And I would like seeing that you were the support on this tour. And I was like, fuck. Like, I just felt like my foot had just gone direct. As soon as I seen JD Clayton support, I just, my foot, like just immediately like in my mouth, I'm like, oh, you fucking idiot. Now you have to like meet this guy and pretend like you didn't just be a total dick to him.
Well,
on that first text message. And so like that, remember that first show I came up, I'm like, hey, so listen, man, I don't know if you know who I am, but I'm the guy who does the podcast and you texted me and I like totally fucking shut you down because I thought, and then I explained that whole situation with the dude, yeah. And like giving out my number and yeah.
Well, the first show I still didn't put it together because
I didn't think so. I was like, there's no way he would like assume that that's who this is, but
yeah, you were running the show and you came up and you were introducing yourself and you were like, hey, if you need anything, here's my number. So I put it in. And when I put in your number,
oh, and I knew the whole time,
I was just like, it's this guy. This guy's a jerk.
I remember when I said that, because you know what, I think like you didn't have any like beers or anything on the ride or whatever, so I made sure that you guys like got some Modelos or something. It was like my peace offering. I was like, hey guys, like here, I brought you some beer, like also like we're gonna be hanging out for the next couple weeks, like here's my phone number. And then once I realized, I was like, well, there's no way he doesn't know now. I was like, all right, I got to explain myself here. But
it was water under the bridge after that point.
So
baby.
Funny, dude. I felt so bad. I was like, oh, no, Jesus Christ.
No, I didn't take anything from it, dude. Last thing I want is to tick somebody off because I'm like doing cold, you know, trying to promote
cold
my
text messages.
I already hate promoting my album in the first place. Now I'm like,
I know. Well, and I tell that story as if I certainly haven't, like, I mean, I don't know if I've ever like cold texted somebody, but I've definitely cold called people before. And I've 100%. I used to, when we first started the podcast, I would sit on like Sunday evenings, and I'd draft like 20 emails to like, dude, I'd fucking send emails to like whoever I could find on George Strait's website. You know what I mean? Like people that there is absolutely no fucking chance that like I'm going to get George Strait on the pod. You know what I mean? Yeah. But I just fire it off because I was like, well, the answer is always no if you don't ask. So I just I just fire off. And then Monday morning, I just bing, 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 like just fire off all these fucking emails and be like, well, I'll see. Like maybe somebody will answer, you know? And I think, honestly, I mean, it worked a couple times. You know, some of those early guests, like, there was a couple for sure that I can think of, like probably in the first about 30 episodes, we had no business fucking interviewing, but you know, shout out to COVID too. They had nothing better to do. So.
All right, dude. Well, it's funny.
Shoot your shot. That's the moral of the story.
Yeah, that's right, dude. I mean, the worst when I was a freight broker, and that's literally, that was the job.
That was your job. Yeah.
Yeah. To cold call. I had one day where I was calling, I was so just discouraged. I couldn't get anybody to like do business with us. And, you know, I'm making no money because it's all commission. And,
yeah.
And I'm also sitting in the tower in the LNC Tower in downtown Nashville, just like looking out and like just being like, man, there's so many guys like doing music out there right now. And like,
I could be playing my guitar right now. I could be coming up with a sick fucking lick right now.
And I call this guy, and you know, you call like seven numbers that are all the incorrect number till you get the one,
So you get the
and
dude.
you get the big guy. And I get him on the phone. And I'm like, hey, Mike, you know, hey, just wanted to call. I work with, you know, this freight broker company, and yada, yada, yada. And he goes, you know, I know what you're doing. You're cold calling me. And I was like,
No.
if you want to call it that, he was
Actually,
like,
sir, I'm just doing my job.
That's
Sorry to bother you.
exactly. How about you never call this number again? And it was like, I'm like, you know what? I don't want to do this anymore. I don't, you know what? And I don't think I will. I
And as a matter of fact, I think I'm out of here.
think I'm out of here. So yeah, I was just like, man, tough, tough deal.
Tough, tough. Sometimes you got to eat some shit on those. Yeah, for sure. I
You
think
do.
I remember one I sent, and it was like, well, there's been a few. Actually, two of the bigger ones that did get back to me was Dolly Parton and Willie Nelson, surprisingly. Not
Oh,
them,
really?
obviously, but like people who, whatever email that I could find on their website, like somebody in within the fucking pits of the team of thousands of people who probably work for them, somebody emailed me back, and they were both very nice. They were like, yeah, you know, like we'll pass it along, but you know, I don't think now is the best time. It was just like, okay, cool. Well, you know what, let me know, I'll be here.
I will still be here
I
later
will still be here whenever it's a good time.
when... Oh man. Dude, yeah. Dolly though,
Oh,
that would
dude,
be so...
it'd be incredible.
One day, dude, one day.
Maybe.
I'll see what I can do.
Yeah, work your cold call magic.
Dolly.
Dolly. Hey, Dolly, how's it
Yeah.
going?
Mind if I call you Dolly?
Mind if I call you Dolly? Yeah. Ms. Barton.
Dolly?
Mrs. Dolly, ma'am.
Is it okay if I use your first name?
Dolly, if that is re your real name. Now seems like a good time to probably talk about high hopes and low expectations, because I feel like it fits with the whole cold call thing. We have high hopes, but very low expectations for these cold calls.
I mean,
Cold
man, that's
calls.
kind of how I've ran my career, right? That's
Yeah.
it's just you swing for the fences, but this is a tough business. And I had the great fortune of meeting Kendall Marvel, who has become a friend and has invited me to play a song with his band a couple times when
That's
he's done
cool.
the Honky Tonk Experience, and he's just been so nice and encouraging. And I asked him if he wanted to book a write, and it finally worked out that we could get together. So we got together at his place in Nashville and took one afternoon. We were about to go on a weekend run with the boys, and we took one afternoon and wrote High Hopes and Low Expectations. He had the title, and we kind of jammed for a little bit till we figured out this kind of riff. He likes to write in D a lot, and so it was, and I don't have a lot of songs in D, so that was I kind of just went with it and really loved it. And yeah, we started just kind of coming up with a song, and took a while. We didn't finish it, so I had to write the last verse on my own and send it to him to see if he dug it. But the narrative was kind of weird because it just slowly developed into this story about a young man that, like, kind of a little bit of my story, like, just leaves his home to try to go make it and become a better version of himself and prove himself. And along the way, he kind of meets an older guy that is much wiser and seen more life. And he gives him the advice to just, have high hopes and low expectations. There's going to be good days and there's going to be bad days. But you're going to keep on going. And it's going to all work out. It'll work out how it's supposed to. And so that was kind of a cool thing because I've been working on this new project and kind of talking to people about it recently. And it wasn't until like a month ago that I had the realization that Kendall was kind of in that moment. I didn't even realize it, but while we were writing, he was kind of the older guy in that song that was giving me this advice to just, have high hopes and low expectations and keep on going. And so yeah, I owe that guy a lot. He's such a wonderful person and incredible songwriter. And it was such a highlight of my career thus far to get to write with him. And I'm really proud of the song that we got.
Golden ticket, ferry ride to western skies. I left my home and the life I loved to become a man that I could be proud of. I sat beside this older fella. All the fool in me. I didn't pay for his advice. The whiskey wisdom's poured out over ice. And he said, high hopes and low expectations. That's what you need. And headed straight, there'll be good days and bad days, but Old Man River keeps on rolling. Through fields and pines, he always finds his way. If you keep on, you'll do the same. Wise old stranger, I thanked him for the conversation. Then I heard all aboard full steam ahead. It's time to leave for the promised land. I've grown old. I rode the backs of my wildest dreams. Life didn't always work out right. You can bet I should sleep good tonight. Same.
back. It is rapid fire time with JD Clayton. And I'm going to start with my favorite question to ask everybody, because I personally eat a lot of gas station food when I'm out driving around. What is your favorite gas station snack?
So the band and I have this conversation quite often. It really depends on the time of day.
Yeah, of course.
If I'm coming in early, I'm doing one of those coffee machines over on the side that, where you like, it's got the touchpad and you can hear it grind the beans.
Oh yeah.
I don't even know if it's actually doing anything, but it like
those makes you think it's fresh. makes a noise.
Yeah. It makes a noise. Satisfied. It sounds like grinded fresh beans. I always go, I'm a dark roast guy. So I go Colombian. Today I went Colombian dark roast from Circle K.
Wow.
You know, when it comes to like a candy bar, I am a fanatic for the Reese's Fast Break. I would do anything for one of those. I like a Red Bull, but the sugar-free tastes better to me.
I'm into the sugar-free.
Sugar-free Red Bull. And then Gatorade has this new thing that's like their version of the Pedialyte. That everybody's like doing their own versions of the those
Gator
now.
Light or whatever they are.
Yeah. So like Gatorade that. Does their own thing. And it's like, I've been digging those. But yeah, I'm all over the board. So,
I like the BioSteel ones. Those are great. The like body, it's like there is a BioSteel one. That's more of a Canada thing. Those are great for hangovers. Like you can taste the salt in them. You drink two of those, you're perfectly fine. Nice. And then, but Body Armor, that's what I'm trying to think of. Body Armor. I'm trying to get a sponsor here, by the way. Body Armor or Gatorade or BioSteel, any of the above.
or Sugar-Free Red Bull.
Or Sugar-Free Red Bull, Zen.
My man needs a pillow for the top shelf, you know what I mean?
I got one in right now, top shelf. Citrus. Okay, that's maybe a fun question. If you could have anybody sponsor you.
Ooh.
A brand sponsor you. Probably one of the ones we just mentioned.
man, you know, I'm a huge fan of Patagonia. I think that would be so sick to be a Patagonia ambassador. I wear way too many of their clothing.
There you go.
Pieces. What else?
Maybe just here's a more interesting question. Maybe like you guys in the band, what's something you all mutually like agree upon that like everybody loves it, everybody drinks or eats it or uses it or whatever it may be? What would be the, like the band's sponsor?
I just went blank on the name. What's that tea? Yerba Mate.
Oh shit. Yeah, okay.
Everybody gets down with those, dude. The festivals last summer out at like Rebels and Renegades, and dude, we threw down some Yerba Mate.
I have a fucking horror story about that actually at Rebels and Renegades. They were just on ice everywhere you went.
Yeah,
there were just buckets of them, and it was like I walked in, I grabbed them, it was crazy hot and I wasn't drinking, so I was like, fuck yeah, I'll drink some of this like weird tea stuff. I had never had one.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, cool, iced tea. Pop one, fucking crack it, drink it. That was delicious. I better have another one. Yep. Pop it, drink
no!
it. Fantastic. This is delicious. I'm loving life. Set goes on, play the set. All right, cool. Now we're chilling. Man, that was pretty good. I had a beer after that. So I was like, all right, I need to bounce back out. You know, because I'll have like a beer and then wait a couple hours and have another one or whatever, you know, just as long as like by the time I have to drive, like, you know, like two or three over the course of like 8 hours, like you're fine. But I probably drank like four or five. I was probably on like my fourth Yerba Mate in those fucking cans, dude. And somebody was like, how many of those have you had? And I was like, I don't know, it's like the fourth one or something. And they had like different flavors. I was like trying them all. It's like, I don't know, I'm feeling pretty good. Like, And they're like, you know, there's caffeine in those, right? And I was like, wait, what? I like Google it. There's like, 150 milligrams or 200 milligrams of caffeine. Bro. Oh, shit. I feel fantastic.
I bet you did. Dude, that is insane. Yeah. Those.
And I pumped the brakes pretty hard on them after that. I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, that's probably enough for one day.
One of those will get you right, man. I mean, they're so delicious.
I was deep in a fucking heavily caffeinated state at that time, though. Like, I was like drinking a Celsius and then probably a couple of Red Bulls later that day on an average day at that point. So it was like my tolerance was luckily very high, or else I might have been ODing on caffeine over here.
Yeah, dude, you start to get the jitters. It's a little scary in the afternoon. Yeah,
I don't want the caffeine scaries. All right. I feel like I asked this one. No, I'm not going to ask that one. No, I do want to ask it because you do some great covers. What is your favorite song to cover? Because you do a bunch of different great ones and like some blends of different covers in your set. What's your favorite that you guys do?
Probably a tie between. So we always cover Tracy Chapman's Give Me One Reason.
Yes. It's fantastic.
Thanks, man. We love that song. And the reason why we do is because I, like I told you from the beginning of when I started music, busking at the farmer's market, that was like one of the songs that I always played. So it just kind of has always been one
stuck
that
with you.
Yeah. And people are like, that's hey, great. I love that song. So I just held on to it. But we do this kind of fun medley when we play Brown Haired Blue Eyed Baby, because that song is like way too short. So we just started adding songs that were in the same key. Mm-hmm. And that is so fun to play at shows. We do the Joker and then we do Bob Marley's Stir It Up. And then we finish it with The Weight. And that's just like a great moment in the show because it's songs that everybody knows and loves. And then we end it by going back into Brown Haired.
Yeah, sandwich it in with the original. Yeah.
So that's fun. You know, I don't know. It's a fine line that you walk when you're doing covers at your show, because you don't want to do too many covers. But at the same time,
opener. But at the same time, the other dynamic to the other side of that coin is like, if you're the opener, nobody's paying attention. You might grab their attention now with that shit, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. They don't know who you are. And if you can play something that they're familiar with, you're more likely to build a connection. So as the opener, that's what we did a lot. But it'll be interesting. I'm going to be doing my first headline tour this fall and first time trying to sell tickets in not my hometown. And so it'll be interesting to see how I structure the show and like figure out what's going to work for everybody.
Definitely. Well, shit, man, I better get you off here. You got other things to tend to here in a few minutes. So thanks for doing the podcast. And now would be the time, I guess, if you want to like plug anything, tell everybody where to go to buy the merch, buy tickets, do all that good stuff. And if you got any shows coming up you want to promote, go ahead.
Yeah. I'm everywhere that you can digest content, and I'm on all platforms that you listen to. I push most stuff to Instagram. And the link in my bio has everything that I'm currently promoting. So, you know, we still have, if you're into vinyl, we still have Long Way From Home on vinyl. And we're currently starting to push my new album, which we'll be announcing in the next couple weeks. And if you haven't gotten a chance to ever see us live, we're doing my first headline tour this fall. That's going to be exciting. A lot of things to learn and new changes, and it'll be a little scary, but we're at that weird in between where I'm not able to be an opener all the time, and so we've got to just kind of make the jump and go for it.
Yeah, man, dive in.
That's right.
Fuck, man, thanks for doing the podcast. This was great.
Yeah, thank you, Garrett. Thanks for having me, man. It was a pleasure.
Anytime.
Do it again.
We'll do it again in person, hopefully, next time. We're going to leave everybody with Beauty Queen, so I'm going to let you take it away, and we'll roll right into the song if you want to like give that one a little intro, tell us a little story about it.
Yeah, dude. Beauty Queen was written with two friends of mine in Nashville. Lauren Huntgate and Bree Doster. It's one of my favorite songs. When we were in the studio, I just tried to kind of imagine we were playing that song live at Red Rocks, and I'm looking out at my buddies and they got their IPAs and everybody's just kind of doing this. And I was like, we need to hit that vibe, boys. And I think we got it. And it's one of my favorite tunes on the record. It's just one I love to put on, and I love, you know, I'm not ashamed of, some guys don't like to listen to their own music, and I like to kind of see where I've come from, and sometimes I put that one on, and it's just such a fun vibe. So yeah, hope
one,
you guys dig it.
Two, three, four. Queen.